Chapter 37. Vampires and Ix are fast, but I dueled their like before. Like the apocryphal Loki, my previous opponents had learned that no matter how quick you are on your feet, you aren't faster than thought. The spell I'd been holding ready lashed out before either of our opponents had moved more than a couple of feet, naked force howling out from my outstretched hand to seize not the Ix, but, in a sudden flash of inspiration, I directed it at the vampire beginning to bound along beside and a little behind it. Clearly, maybe even wisely, the vamp was hoping to stand in the devourer's shadow when the hurt started flying. I cried out,
"Fuzari!"
And my raw will hammered the vampire down, and at an oblique angle, directly in front of and beneath the feet of the Ix. If you have no weapons with which to fight the enemy, find a way to make your enemy be your weapon. If you can pull it off, it makes you look amazing. The vampire went under the Ix's feet with a wailing squeal and a crunchy-sounding splatter of vile fluids. The collision tripped up the massive hunting creature as its legs tangled with the vampire's rubbery, sinuous limbs, and the Ix came crashing to the ground, its unnatural heartbeat thudding loud and furious, swiping and smashing in fury at the entanglement, without ever bothering to consider what it might be destroying. Susan adjusted almost instantly to what had happened and closed on the sprawling Ix with incredible speed. Her arm blurred as the Ix began recovering its balance, smashing her club straight down onto its skull and driving its head down to rebound from the floor. The Ix took the hit like it was a love tap, slashing at Susan with its claws, but she had already bounded into the air, jerking her knees up to avoid the grabbing claws and flying clear over the devourer to a roar of approval from the watching goblins. She landed in a baseball player's slide and shot forward over the gore-smeared stone, snapping one hand back to grab the throat of the downed vampire as she did. The battered body came free of the Ix's limbs, minus a limb or two of its own, and thrashed weakly, slowing Susan's slide and stopping her forward motion a bare inch before her feet would have slid into the green flame surrounding the fighting ring. The Ix whirled around as it staggered to its feet again, preparing to pursue her, when I lifted my blasting rod, snarled,
"Fuego!"
and hammered it with all the power I could shove through the magical focus. Blue-white fire, blindingly bright against the rather dim green flames of the Earl King's will, drew a group scream of surprise and discomfort from the gathered goblins. The fire struck the Ix and gouged a chunk of black, rubbery flesh the size of a watermelon out of the massive muscles of its back. Its head whipped back so sharply that the top of its head practically touched its own back, and it lost its balance for another second or two, slipping on the gore the first vampire had provided as it turned back toward me. I dimly took note of Susan as this happened. The half-crushed, half-dismembered vampire flailed wildly with its remaining claws and fangs, putting up an insanely desperate, vicious fight in an attempt to hang on to its life. Susan took a hard blow to the side of the head, and when she turned back, her lip was bloodied, her teeth bared in a snarl, and the dark swirls and points of her tattoos began to spread over her face like dark ink dripped upon water. She dropped the improvised club, got both hands on the vampire's throat, and with calm, precise strength, thrust its head into the green fire. There was a bloody explosion as that fire devoured the vampire, and though its heat had seemed no greater than any campfires, the temperature beneath the surface of that fire had to be something as hot as the sun. As the vampire's skull entered it, it simply disintegrated with a howl of vaporized liquids, spattering tiny bits of bone like shrapnel and covering Susan and the dying vampire both in an enormous, dark, foul-smelling cloud.
"Susan!"
I shouted and darted over to one side so that I wouldn't be loosing blasts of fire blindly into that cloud if I missed. I hit the devourer, gouging out a small trough in one of its arms, missed with the third blast, and scored with the fourth, burning a scorch mark as wide as my thigh across its hip. The drumbeat of its heart was a huge pounding rhythm by now, like the double bass drums of a speed metal band. The hits seemed only to make it more furious, and it shifted into a controlled forward rush, meant to crowd me into the outer ring of fire, or else leave me unable to escape its grasping claws. But either the blow on the noggin or one of the blasts I'd unleashed had slowed the Ix down. I sprinted for the angle on its approach, for the path that would let me evade the devourer and its outstretched claws, and got clear of its attack, beating the monster out on footwork and keeping from being trapped against the circle's perimeter as it came at me. I found a fierce smile spreading over my lips as I moved. I kept hurling blasts at its legs as I ran, attempting to slow it even more. I didn't hit with more than a quarter of them, I think, but the mist bolts of fire splashed against the Earl King's green fire in sizzling bursts of light. The adrenaline made my senses crystalline, bringing me every sight and sound with a cold purity, and I suddenly saw where the devourer was weakest. Though it was hard to tell with its alien movement, I realized that it was favoring one side ever so slightly. I darted in for a better look, nearly got my head ripped off by a flailing fist, and saw that the Ick's leg was wounded, low on the back of its thigh, where the black flesh was twisted and mangled. Had it been mortal skin and tissue, I would have thought it the result of a severe burn, as long as whatever had done the burning had been molten metal hot and shaped like mouse's teeth. The foo dog had gotten to the Ick during its encounter with Thomas with a wound that had threatened to cripple it. That's why it had been forced to withdraw. If it stayed and Mouse managed another such strike, it would have been entirely immobilized. "Good luck this time, big guy," I heard myself say. "You've got nowhere to run."